And as the sound of birds chirping in the background graces your ears, that's the last grace your ears will ever have. It's Ewan Spence here with All About Symbionts Insight podcast number 29. Joining me and probably editing that opening soliloquy I've just made, Rafe Blandford.
In Sussex, where the birds are.
And looking for the birds, I suspect, from Symbian Guru, Ricky Catton joins us this week.
Yes, from Texas, where the heat is.
Ah, which part of Texas, Ricky?
Down by Houston.
Ah, lovely. So you're far enough away from all these tornadoes and everything, yep?
Absolutely, right down by the hurricane season, so take what I can get.
now, don't laugh there, Rafe, because there has been a very small wind blowing through the mobile smartphone market in the last week. And I, of course, speak of the announcement of the wonderphone that is the LG KT610. Ricky, you've had your hands on this, I understand.
Absolutely. I have it with me here. And this is actually the first non-Nokia S60 phone that I've ever touched personally. And I have to say, LG doesn't have a really good reputation as far as GSM phones, but this is actually a very well-built handset. So I'm really excited to give it a full rundown.
Yeah, I remember seeing this phone, I think when 3GSM or MWC in Barcelona, the build quality was a bit dodgy there. So it's really good to hear that it's improved. I don't know about you, Ricky, but I think it's quite interesting in the form factor department. I mean, it's a clamshell like the E90, right? And but I don't think it really is in the class of the E90. I think it sets its own little category, if you like, and it's more similar to stuff like, the Sidekick or the Danger Hip Top and phones like that, which are sort of messaging-centric. So I think actually, it's got a bit of potential there, assuming it can get on to operators and get marketed a bit.
Very much so.
And it's got a lovely retro look when it's closed, the outside with this very small display and the big massive buttons. It kind of reminds me of the Sony Ericsson 888, if you can remember that far back.
Nope, I don't think I can.
I think you outdated me as well.
The very first GSM phone that had infrared, so you could use it as a modem as well. As you can guess, that makes it incredibly retro. Ricky, you've posted up some pictures of that, haven't you? Where are they lurking?
Yes, those are at mobileburn.com. We have a full gallery there.
No, just the website was all we wanted. You don't get too many plugs. We've got to space them out over the half the hour, okay?
All right,
what other news have we got? Well, we've got the iNews, haven't we? We've got the great big corporation out of San Francisco debuting a slightly tweaked product. It is, of course, iGoogle. Yes, Rafe, tell us about iGoogle.
So iGoogle's actually been available for a while now. It's basically Google's customizable homepage, and it's available on the PC, and you can add various widgets, or in the case of Google, gadgets to it. And this lets you put RSS feeds or a search box or the latest weather. And this was made available for mobile phones a little while ago, and it was actually optimized for S60. But they've just added a new feature to this, sort of a new version of the product, if you like, that lets you customize what you see on your mobile phone on your PC, which is obviously a lot easier to do rather than fiddling about with the small screen and buttons on the phone. You can do it from the PC. So it's just a way of being able to more easily customize your iGoogle page for your phone. So I think it's a nice little touch, and Google keep on rolling out these updates for mobile, and it's great to see. And I think there's been another one as well this week. I know Ricky's had a play with this is a Google Reader that's sort of been optimized for S60. So what's the key difference there, Ricky?
The key difference is really that I think a while back we all kind of realized that we could use the iPhone optimized version on our S60 phones of Google Reader Mobile. And the newly launched S60 version is, it's at the regular /M URL, so there's no special URL to go to. And it basically just looks like the iPhone one, but it's a little bit more optimized for the non-touch screen. The links are a little bit more apparent, and it's just a lot more graphical and easier to use rather than just plain text on a white background.
And it's probably just worth saying, for those who aren't familiar with Google Reader, it's basically an RSS aggregator, so you can collect headlines on your phone. Of course, that is built into the S60 web browser, but personally, I don't find that very usable because of the lack of sync for RSS feeds. It's great for one or two, but if you're like me and sort of subscribe to sort of tens of RSS feeds, even hundreds, having something, an online version that you can access both on your phone and from the PC is really great. And I know I'm a big fan of Google Reader. And if you're interested in using RSS feeds on your phone, I think would recommend either this one or Bloglines Mobile.
Yes, and actually, I was, in regards to the Google, the iGoogle customization from the desktop, do you guys think that's maybe a little bit backwards? Like, instead of making it the mobile customized from the desktop, it should have been just making it easier to customize from the mobile?
Yeah, I think that's actually an interesting point, because as you say, you know, actually that would make more sense in some ways. I mean, you can do a bit of customization on the phone, so I kind of see it as as an add-on to that, which, you know, it has benefits, because basically fiddling about with those sort of web-top things on a mobile is still a bit tricky, and, you know, I think it's kind of analogous to the way with widsets, which is sort of Nokia's Java-based widget platform. It's more easy to reorganize the widget layout using the sort of PC version, which is then displayed on the mobile. But yeah, I guess in an ideal world, everything should really be done entirely through the mobile browser, or at least to have the option to do that. So yeah, I guess it is a bit of a retrograde step in some ways, but at the same time, I can understand why they've done it, because people are still more familiar with doing that kind of thing on a PC, and the user experience of doing it on the mobile phone just isn't great. But Ricky's just said in the back channel that Ray schools me, but actually I think he's got an important point. But I'm just thinking of, you know, people who are maybe less familiar with fiddling about in their mobile browser, want to be able to set this up really quickly and easily. Maybe less important for power users who are willing to fiddle a bit. But actually, it's a good point, because, you know, actually in an ideal world, you shouldn't have to have a PC to do this stuff. And actually, so many of the mobile services at the moment, basically, to be able to set up and use effectively, you need a PC. And I'd like to see a lot more of this become mobile only, because after all, if you look at the emerging markets, you can't guarantee that people are going to have access to a PC. So Ricky is actually right, despite what he may have said in the back channel.
I just thought it was kind of a backslide. But anyways, go ahead, Ray.
That's okay. Rafe, of course, is going to be the UK entry, the London 2012 Walking Backwards as Fast as Possible event. Yeah, should that be a whoa? Speaking of other events, and trying to put the puns aside, there was a very large gathering of mobile enthusiasts last week to celebrate one of the large mobile phone companies launching, well, what were they doing at the S60 Meet Evening event in Boston, whose name I'm reading out backwards as well for some reason. Ricky, tell us about the Ricky Evening with S60. Was in Boston last week as well, wasn't it?
It absolutely was. If you're not familiar, the Evening with S60 is basically just kind of a geek meetup where any kind of S60 enthusiast or somebody curious in it can come. It's a very casual atmosphere, and there's usually a lot of S60 people on the Nokia side as far as the people in charge of the different features, and then there's a whole lot of just enthusiasts and stuff, so it's a great chance to meet, and I'm going to stop plugging now. Anyways, people that came and kind of demoed was Zemote, which is a really cool little Bluetooth gaming controller, and a bunch of others. It's just nice to be able to kind of mingle with consumers and S60 people in the same place, really casual. So it was a very good meet, though.
I think it's important pointing out, especially in the States where there are no S60 users according to all the statistics, so actually finding another S60 user, you know, Ricky obviously had to fly in from Texas to Massachusetts to find another S60 user, and just goes to show that Nokia still have some work to do in the States.
Very true, but I think they're making headway with the events. I was at, actually been to the Chicago one and now the Boston one, and both of them were well packed with people, so that's always a good sign.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good sign. And I know that they're planning some more Evening with S60 events. And you can go on to the Consumed by S60 blog, which is on s60.com, and let them know where you'd like the next event to be. I might be a bit biased when I say I'd like to have it in London, but I know there's a popular call to have more in the States and some in India as well. But let them know where you want to have it next.
Well, if we have it in London, can't we get Steve to come down and have his band play the music?
Yeah, that would be great.
Ricky, could you arrange that? Could you get Shed to play the music at the next Evening with S60?
I think that would be absolutely fantastic, and I will definitely do everything that I can.
I mean, think of all these young kids we'll be able to introduce to Steve's legendary cover of Hawkwind's Silver Machine. Oh, sorry, it's Nokia. Hawkwind's Black Machine. There we go, just in honor of the 82. But I think the time has come now, guys, to speak of cloud computing. Seriously, okay. And now I think the time is here to speak about issues of cloud computing, of people having their information synchronized from device to device, from PC to internet. Yes, it's time to talk about Ovi. No, it's not. But that's not. Ricky broke the track earlier with his first mention, the iPhone. We're desperately trying to avoid it. But of course, the big news is the iPhone. And I say big for a device that has a small percentage of the overall mobile sales market, but still does really bat above its weight. And one of the most interesting things to me, twofold. Well, the first one was Mobile Me, this sort of cloud computing social, you know, the value of the hardware is in the software. And it sounds to me that this is what Nokia have been saying for a long time and what their Ovi represents, which is the software, that the hardware is the key to getting into the powerful leveraging of software.
Yes, I think that's right, Ewan. I'll just jump in here. The only thing I'd say is Mobile Me takes a rather different approach to Ovi.
It charges for a start, doesn't it?
Well, it charges for a start. I believe it's $100 a year. Is that right, Ricky?
Yes.
Yeah, so at $100 a year versus Ovi, which is going to be free for the most part, although some of the value-added services will obviously be charged for. But also I think it's worth pointing out that the scope is very different. So Ovi is part of a service platform that includes things like Engage, Nokia Maps, Nokia Music, but it will also have a sort of a sync element. If you look on the Ovi.com website, you can see there's a sync tab. Hasn't yet launched yet, but we assume that will be for syncing particularly calendar, contact and possibly calendar information as well. Whether that will evolve into email at any point is, of course, open to debate. And whether it will be as fully realized in terms of providing Ajax applications for each of those as Mobile Me does. So just to state more clearly, Mobile Me is basically the Apple version, which will sync calendar, contact and task information, I believe, between a PC computer or an Apple computer, also Windows, it will sync with Outlook and the iPhone. As well as obviously in the cloud as well. So if you like, it's a combination of sort of Google Mail, Google Calendar that all sync up with both the mobile device and the PC. And when he was describing this, I think Steve Jobs described it as Microsoft Exchange for the rest of us, the idea that, you know, people would sync this stuff personally. I think it's a pretty powerful message, and there's a lot to be said for this. Although I do wonder how many people actually use their phone for email and calendar information outside of sort of typical smartphone users. That's, you know, always been an interesting one, how much do PIM functions actually get used in a phone, and it's been one of the reasons that I think some of the Nokia stuff hasn't advanced as much as it might have done. But as going back to Ovi, I think it is, I do think you have to draw a difference. Also, one other very important difference is the business model, and Ovi is designed very specifically to be open to third parties and to connect with third parties. So we can already see that in things like Share Online, where not only does it connect with the Nokia service Ovi Share, it also connects with Flickr, Vox and another number of other photo hosting websites. I think we'll probably see the same elsewhere in other bits of Ovi more in time, and there's a very stated intent that there's going to be a number of APIs so developers will be able to tie into the system. By contrast, of course, Apple is going, as it typically does, for a closed garden approach where it controls the entire value chain from end to end. You know, the intention is that you sync with Apple products and sync with Apple services, and that you don't use any third-party stuff. Now, personally, I think in the long run, that's a mistake, but in the short term, it probably means it's easier to implement, which does bring us to an important point. Ovi is not yet fully realized. It's not yet ready. Many bits of it are still in beta or haven't even been released yet, whereas Mobile Me looks like it's going to be available sometime later in the summer and will be available immediately and will be fully realized. So the question I'd pose to both Ricky and Ewan is, which one is better, given that Apple is actually going to have a sort of fully realized, mature offering before Ovi even sort of gets out of the gate in some departments?
I think that's a very good question, actually. And I think that I think Ovi is going to come out on top eventually. And I want to make sure to emphasize eventually. I think that to begin with, obviously Mobile Me is going to have the first start and it's going to be more fully realized. But I think that the openness of Ovi will result in more users, given that, you know, I mean, obviously we would assume that it's going to be for S60. I would guesstimate that we're going to see it available for S40 phones as well. given that they're all with the Nokia stuff. And that's a far bigger market. You know, if 1 in 10 iPhone users use MobileMe and 1 in 10 Nokia users use OV services, that by itself is going to make OV come out on top. So I think in the long run, I think we'll see OV come out on top, but I think MobileMe will definitely get the lion's share of the hype and the first mover status on that.
I think it's fair to say that the typical Apple iPhone user is different to the typical S60 and indeed to the typical S40 user. So again, we're being drawn into a one-on-one comparison, and it's very easy to make, and we're guilty of it ourselves to think like iPhone versus N95 and N95 8 gig versus the iPhone 3G. But I don't think this is a one-on-one fight. I don't think this is a direct matchup. You know, Ricky said there, S40 typical is a huge user base, and they're going to be interested in backup of contacts, potential picture and video upload. The iPhone users, I suspect, are going to be much more strongly geared towards mail, towards information. Yes, they will have pictures and video as well, assuming that Apple gets out and gets some video sorted in the near future. But they're going to be talking about much more concentrated data, I feel. OV to me always seems to be just a little bit, you know, one step removed. It is going to take all your personal information on board, but it also takes on board things like pictures, things like location, things, yes, like your address book as well, but it's also part of storage and backup as well. So I think both of them will come out on top in their respective markets. But to actually answer the question, I think when the magazine features do the straight head-to-head, the tightness of integration will win, and we've yet to see Apple's solution in the real world, and we've yet to see all of the OV elements running together in the real world as well. So I'm going to be a liberal Democrat here and say I'm not going to stand for this question. I'm just going to let Ricky's answer do it, because I think it's quite nice.
Yeah, no, I actually agree with both of you, and I think it is worth emphasizing that really they're slightly different approaches. However, I do think it's important because it emphasises the importance of kind of the service and software, not just on the phone but off the phone. And we've talked a lot about services and software in the past. And in one sense, I think you can see them as two different approaches to the same future. And I would expect in the future some other services to get added to MobileMe, just as with OV, you know, we've got the gaming, we've got the music, and we've got the sort of images right now. And I expect to see sort of PIM data added into that. So I wonder if they might in the future not get closer together, but I do agree with you, you know, Apple's sort of integration and slickness will initially, I think there'll be a fair amount of hype around it, as there is with many Apple products. But I think some of the mainstream media has perhaps missed that this isn't, you know, a uniquely Apple thing. I think all the mobile manufacturers are looking towards the future in the fact that, you know, it's not going to be really about devices, it's going to be just as much about all the software and services you can access. And I think Ricky was absolutely right when he said OV is more difficult to implement, but ultimately open is better than closed, because I fundamentally believe the ecosystem model, if you like, for building business, i.e. cooperating with each other and having open APIs that complement each other and allow interaction, is much stronger, even if it's harder to manage. And it's, you could draw the same analogy at the moment between sort of S60, which is an incredibly functionally rich platform, yet has some usability issues in many areas, whereas the iPhone doesn't do so many things, but does those things very well. You do wonder what the future holds, so it'll be an interesting one to watch. So I think, but on the other hand, this kind of competition, and I'm sure we're going to say this about the iPhone generally in a minute, is very important. But we did deliberately put this first in the podcast because this service stuff hasn't been concentrated so much on in the initial excitement about the iPhone. But I do actually think it's probably where the battle is really going to take place in the future.
One of the interesting battles that Apple seems to have not won, and one thing that I found quite disappointing was the pricing model of buying the unit. I mean, obviously the headline number, we've half the price, it's $200, it's $199. But backloading the rest of that fee, you know, an additional $240 on your 2-year contract fee. You know, Apple, I always thought, was going to be the one company that could change how mobile phones are actually sold. And they kind of got there. I mean, they got a little bit with the rev share with the networks, selling at full price, taking the rev share, keeping the sort of monthly line rentals down. And But yeah, with the iPhone 3G coming in now, we're seeing that they're just another phone manufacturer now. They sell a phone to a network, the network subsidizes it, the network locks it on your monthly fees, locks you into a long-term contract. That kind of left me disappointed. And people are like looking at me going, well, that's strange. We thought you hated Apple. But the point was, this was a chance to actually do something different in a free market. And it's lost that chance now. And the worry for me is that Apple are now going to have to focus a little bit more on what the networks want from a phone, i.e. we'd like a button with MMS that gives you a bit more subsidy and so on, rather than what admittedly they are very good at, which is the end user experience. I mean, am I wrong in thinking that Apple might have been the people who could have turned that wheel?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. In fact, there was an article on MocoNews.com or .net recently saying just that. You know, Apple was, when the iPhone first came out, everybody was like, awesome, somebody's finally challenging this, you know, subsidy model that obviously is kind of flawed, and, you know, really bringing phones back to consumers being the customer as opposed to the carrier being the customer. And I think we were all kind of disappointed when the, you know, when the news came out that basically Apple kind of conceded to the carriers. And it's kind of like, well, you were so close, but, you know, you left the battle, so to speak. And I think that I agree 100% that it kind of, and while we've all kind of ragged on all the other manufacturers and said, you know, you guys should do it like this, well, now we're kind of seeing how hard that really is if, you know, if even Apple is like, well, we really can't do this as well as we thought we could, so we're going to go back with the old way that everybody else does it. It kind of, to me, the whole Monday thing, aside from Mold B, was very much Me Too. And sadly, I think that the subsidy model is just another aspect of Me Too.
Yeah, no, I agree with you guys. And just to sort of make it clear for people listening, what we mean by this is, you know, although the upfront cost of the iPhone has reduced, and I do actually think that's very important in creating a perception of a cheaper device, the actual total cost of ownership, i.e. the amount you have to pay over the lifetime of the contract, I believe in the States it's actually gone up because they put $10 on the price of the data package, which you're obliged to take if you have an iPhone, in addition to having a minutes plan. And I also understand that there's no SMS bundle within the plan either, so for people who want to use SMS they have to add that on top of the bundle as well. So, you know, the monthly price in the US is going to be something between $70 and $80. In the UK it's slightly different, and actually unusually the UK has come off doing quite well in pricing terms. O2 is I think charging £99 on a £30 contract for the 8 gig version. It's obviously a little bit more for the 16 gigabyte version, but if you move up to, I think it's a £45 contract, you'll get the iPhone for free. And this is what we're used to seeing with many of the N series and other high-end phones. So I think the iPhone will be in a better position to compete with some of those phones. Of course, it's still on a slightly higher contract, and the actual contract itself isn't all that generous compared to what's available on other networks. So I think this time round, the iPhone will suffer less from price, but may suffer from being locked to one particular network, especially in the UK, where we have a choice of five main GSM networks. But I rather suspect this subsidy change will actually lead to better sales, perhaps outside of the States, but might actually lead to, you know, slightly poorer sales within the States. It'll also be interesting to see what happens in terms of jailbreak type phones, those that have been unlocked, whether they continue to be exported and available, because I know Apple are going to be tightening up there. For example, they're going to make people sign up to the contract in both Apple stores and AT&T stores, and the same in the UK, it'll be in O2 or Carphone Warehouse stores. You'll have to sign up to a contract right there and then rather than walk away and activating later, which makes it more difficult to sort of do the unlocked jailbreak phones that then get sold on eBay. As we know, some estimates suggest that a third of the first version of the iPhone were actually unlocked, jailbroken and then sold elsewhere, which I think had a serious impact on AT&T in terms of their expected revenue. So yes, but I agree with you too. It is rather sad to see this, because I was rather hoping that we might see a model where unlocked phones became more generally accepted, but it seems it's not going to happen this time round. But there was one other element of the iPhone that really interested me, and I suspect it's caught both of your interests as well, and that's to do with...
It's the flush headphone socket!
Well, there is that, yes, but I was actually thinking something a little bigger scale, and that's the application store model. And for people that don't know, basically they're adding applications to iTunes, and you'll be able to access this both from the phone and obviously from iTunes on the PC. And it's obviously, in one sense, a much more controlled walled garden model, and developers have to submit their applications for distribution through this, but I do think it makes for a very pleasant user experience. I mean, I don't know what you think, Ricky, but I think this is really perhaps how Nokia should have done the download model rather than signing up with specific third-party content partners. They should have opened it up more generally to developers and had something more like the Apple Application Store model.
Yes, and I've said this numerous times on SimbianGuru. I know that a lot of developers are not really excited about the App Store because they're saying, well, it's so much more limited and that sort of thing. But in terms of the end consumer experience, you know, with S60 or even any other smartphone platform, sure, there's thousands and thousands of applications available. But if the consumer can't find those easily, you know, then they might as well not even be there. And I think that that's an important part of the iPhone App Store, is any application that's available is going to be there in one place. Consumers know where to get it, and it's organized nicely, just right there. And I think that that's going to be, I think that's going to do huge things for consumer awareness of third-party applications on smartphones. And I know that that's usually a big deal, and that's kind of the separation of smartphone and feature phone, more or less, is native applications. And so I think that I for one think that the App Store should definitely be studied and changes made to the download client, because it's the same basic idea the download client is, but you know, there's no way for developers that I've found to get their application in there other than working out some big corporate deal with Nokia. And I would definitely like to see more of a community type directory of sorts of S60 applications like that. That's easy for developers to get into, and you can tell, you know, when a new person gets an S60 phone for the first time, instead of saying, oh, you can check this place, and this place for applications, you know, they have one place to go and it's all there. And I think that really, I think that benefits developers more in the end run, because while it may be a little bit more hassle to get their application there, it definitely opens them up far more to bigger adoption in terms of consumers, just because it's there and the discovery is made a lot easier.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's the discovery and route to market is all important. I do actually think Apple should also make it possible to distribute these applications independently of the
App Store. They actually are, Ray.
Well, they're only doing it
for enterprise
and for 100 people. But I mean, that's not what I mean. What I mean by that is completely freely distributable, as in if they want to make the downloads available on their own developer side and have them sideloaded, there should be that capability too. And I, you know, obviously they don't want to do that because it might affect revenue from the App Store, though I can't really imagine they're going to be all that great after running costs are taken into account. But, you know, just as you can use a SIS file from anywhere, I think Apple should make those sort of applications available from anywhere they like, even assuming that they still do this App Store, which I do think is a great distribution and discovery model. Ewan, did you have any thoughts on the App Store?
I actually think it's route to market. We've covered that. We've covered the fact that it makes it easy. What I find interesting is that it's the same percentage that the music labels get, which is 30%. The Apple keeps 30%, 70% goes to the developer. In terms of music, Apple keeps 30%, 70% goes to the labels that sell the music. So it literally is just doing the same trick that Apple did with music, but with applications. And I think because of that, it's very likely to happen. I also wonder exactly what the admin cost is. I mean, my initial thoughts were great. They're going to make so much money, 30% of all the applications sold. But there again, you could say that with music as well. They were still getting a 30% cut. And music sells a lot more than the applications sold. So I think, you know, I don't think that the iStore is going to be running anything more than a potential break even. And that's the first one. excuse me a second. The second one on the App Store is, again, it keeps everything under Apple's control. MobileMe keeps it under Apple's control. The music, the application keeps everything under Apple's control. We're already seeing people querying some of the terms and conditions for the SDK, and there's a bit of a grey area about what you can actually do with or without the GPS, for example, and people are unclear. So I do think there may be some more gotchas to come out of there. But again, in the same way, you know, the Symbian Sound program, you know, locks out some of the higher functionality to you as well. All Apple need to do now is just run this application through a great big test bed and go, you're using this API, and this API. That's not allowed. Bounce it back to the developer. Congratulations to them, though, for making freeware applications genuinely free on the store and not charging the developer anything. I wonder if we're going to see some people use that as a sneaky backdoor way of earning revenue without giving Apple a share. That's going to be an interesting one for things like subscription services or maybe access to a website where perhaps the membership on the website is a $10 fee, but that gives you the free application for the iPhone. All in all, I think it's a great idea. It's obviously something that's been pioneered by other people, and I can't help think that you've got the Apple application store on one hand, and you're going to have what Engage are trying to do with the Engage Arena client and downloading games on the other hand. And I think that's going to be an interesting... It's not going to be a battle. There's very little crossover, although it may appear that, especially when you consider Super Monkey Ball was on the original Engage, and Digital Legends, who are doing the great big RPG, are also doing one on the Engage as well. And I think that's going to be an interesting battle. The other interesting thing, of course, is, you know, the Apple iPhone is a very relatively difficult app platform to develop on. It doesn't give you background threads. It only gives you four application threads as well. And that, I think, Rafe, is going to cause a little bit of problems and consternation in the developer community.
I think that's right. I mean, it's not so much making things difficult to develop, because the Objective-C, which is used in the iPhone development, is relatively easy to pick up, especially if you're an existing Apple developer. However, this limitation on background threads, I think, is more problematic. And Apple have come up with an alternative to this, which I think they're going to release sort of for availability in September. And this is a notification system, and it's specifically targeted basically at network applications who are connecting out to the network. And you'll be able to set a notification with an Apple server that you want to be notified about new events. So this could be for something like instant messaging, but theoretically could also be used for IRC and sort of other network type events. How extensive this is going to be isn't quite clear yet. We're still waiting for some details from Apple, but this is the way of dealing with the fact you can't run an application in the background. And in one sense, it's quite an elegant approach, and again, it sort of suggests Apple having rather total control, in that they will control what goes through these notification events in the system. And as some, I saw a blog post suggest, this is quite a good way of monitoring what things are popular on the iPhone and what things are being used and to what extent. But at the same time, I also think this reflects the fact that the Apple isn't really using an operating system that's suitable for mobile devices in any way. Having this limitation on background threads, where Steve Jobs said it was due to battery life and resources, well, it may be true on the OS that the iPhone is using, which is, of course, a customized version of OS X. But, you know, there are plenty of other mobile OSs that use background threads, including, of course, Symbian, but also some other Linux variants and Windows Mobile. And Jeroen reminded me when this first happened that, indeed, some of the very early Cyan operating systems were also capable of doing this and managed to...
Seeing as Steve's not here, well, back in my day on the original Cyan Series 3, we had an 8 MHz Z80 Zilog processor, and we could multitask 10 applications at once in the background on two AA batteries, and it would last 35 hours. Ooh, look what the future's given us now.
Well, thank you for that interesting invitation of Steve. I do hope he doesn't listen to this podcast. But yeah, no, that's absolutely right. So I think it's pretty... shady in some ways.
It's a disingenuous answer, shall we
say. Yeah, to make this claim. And I think it really reflects the problems with the mobile platform that they're using. But it is typical Steve Jobs sort of stage management, a sort of sleight of hand to really hide the real issue. But I think it does perhaps say something about the issues that might be in the future for Apple in terms of their the software platform. You know, the reason this sort of thing is important, and the reason that even this notification system might not actually handle everything, is there are a surprising number of applications that are resident in the background. It's not just things like instant messaging. You know, think of something like a satellite navigation program. You're driving along the road, and all of a sudden the phone rings. And on the iPhone, this will mean the phone will ring, the satellite navigation application will close, and suddenly you miss an important junction. And indeed, when you try and go back to the sat-nav program, possibly, of course, depends how this is written, may mean that the route has been lost. But it's also simple things like if you want to take a note while you're doing something else in another application, you have to close that down and start up again. And while a certain amount of smart programming can get around this, there are plenty of things, applications, that it won't really be possible to do this with, and you can think about timed events as well. So, for example, this means it would be very difficult to write an application that's lived in the background and looked for you to arrive at, say, a specific locale and either give you a notification that you've arrived at the, you know, the chemist shop, or change your profile to silent in the background when you arrive at work. All the sorts of things that we're used to doing on S60 phones, which won't necessarily be possible. And so although Apple might be very keen to underline some of the innovation available on its developer platform, I noted in particular there were things around the accelerometer with the aforementioned Super Monkey Ball, there are also problems as well. So it'll be very interesting to see how this develops down the road and what sort of applications we see come out. You know, are they going to be dominated by sort of freeware applications that are typical of those you find on PDAs? Which I actually wonder how much, you know, how much impetus they'll have for mass market spread. You know, how possible will it be to create killer applications? While I don't doubt there's going to be a certain number of them, I'm perhaps wondering whether the iPhone and the iPod Touch application that come out hark more back to the sort of PDA days and the likes of the Palm Pilot, rather than the sort of application we tend to see on S60, which tend to be highly integrated into the phone and take advantage of specific mobile features. Be interesting to see. So something to watch in the next 6 months, I think.
So, Ricky, are you looking forward to doing my 10 best calculator applications for the iPhone on mobile burn then?
No.
actually, it's going to happen, though, isn't it?
It probably is. One thing that I do want to point out as well, though, in regards to the background notifications, and I think that a lot of people miss this, is, you know, Steve Jobs likened it to the SMS notification, where no matter what you're doing on the phone, if a text comes in, it actually takes over the screen, and there's a small, you know, box that says, what do you want to do with this text that's come in? There's no option to completely not, you know, if I'm using GPS to use Rafe's example, if I'm using GPS, I really don't care about phone calls or text messages or emails at that time, because I don't want to miss anything, you know, especially if I'm navigating somewhere I've never been before. And so I think that, you know, say you've got, I don't know, 20 applications on your iPhone, which is a number I usually have on any S60 phone. If every one of those applications is able to pop up from the background and notify me of some event or, you know, something, then that's going to make it incredibly intrusive in the actual use of the phone. You know, it's kind of similar to the battery notification on S60. If your battery's dying, it reminds you and it completely takes over all of your buttons and everything on the phone, and you have to address that situation right there. There's no option for the user to set the priorities. And I think that that's something that is very negative in terms of user experience. And I wonder if there will be an option for users to say, you know what, do not notify me of anything right now. Because I could definitely see that being just a horrid experience, being constantly interrupted by things that I would prefer at that time to not be notified of.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think this could actually be said for a lot of the iPhone platform in general in terms of the user experience. I'm not sure how well it will extend as you put more applications and services on it, because some of the UI paradigms of the iPhone are based around simplicity, and as you add complexity by adding more applications, some of that will break down. I think Ricky's come up with a great example there. So it'll be very interesting to see what reality is like when it actually comes out. So, I mean, I guess our final question for Ricky is, you know, you're Mr. Tablet Guru, you're Mr. Symbian Guru, are you going to become Mr. iPhone Guru as well?
I can actually confidently say no, and the reason I can say that is because iPhone Guru has already been registered. So that domain is no longer available, and it was not registered by me.
Okay. So there you go.
So that's the answer to that.
The excuse from the All About Zoom In podcast. No iPhoneGuru.com domain name run by Ricky. I can hear all the Apple people crying in the background, and they're probably going to have trouble sleeping tonight now, Ricky.
I'm sure. I may have to become the iPhone something else. I may have to forfeit the guru title in the future.
I'm sure we can come up with something inventive, though, surely. I mean, surely a well-placed hyphen is going to be able to get you around that. Or you could be the Apple phone guru, maybe. Or the Jesus guru. That's probably gone as well, actually, already. But, you know, it would get your hit rates up in Texas, though.
I've always said to Ricky that he needs to consolidate everything under the one gurutastic.com domain name. But for some reason, he doesn't seem very keen on that idea.
Well, because then, of course, he would be the GT of phone bloggers, wouldn't he? And on that pun, I think we'll go to our highlights of the upcoming week. Can't mention. So lots of interesting things happening this week. And if you want to find out what they are, when they happen, you need to be visiting news.bbc.co.uk. Once you've been there, do, of course, see me and Guru. Ricky, URL, you've got one final plug. This is probably the best time to do it.
Symbian-guru.com.
Visit Orbe Square.
Yay. Unless you've got a portrait landscape on your laptop, in which case you'd be in widescreen. As always, allaboutsymbian.com for Rafe and myself. It all remains to say thank you to my co-hosts on the show today, Ricky Cadden.
And Rafe Blanford.
And Ewan Spence.
Thank you very much for listening.
Woohoo!